This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Plinter.
Well, Margaret, we're just a few weeks away from the next open enrollment to purchase health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. And while millions of Americans gained coverage during the first open enrollment, there are still millions who are uninsured leading into round two.
The first open enrollment exceeded expectations by the administration on how many Americans would sign up. 8 million people signed up for coverage, about 5 million gained coverage under Medicaid expansion, and millions of young adults were able to stay on their parents' plan up through age 26.
According to a new poll just released by Kaiser Family Foundation, many of the currently uninsured Americans have the least amount of knowledge about the upcoming enrollment.
So that poll showed that this group was least informed about open enrollment details, and open enrollment begins on November 15th. So still a big job to do getting the word out in those communities and among those individuals.
And maybe it's sort of being lost in all of the noise, and certainly part of that noise is the issues around Ebola. The administration has stepped up safety protocols in the wake of the few Ebola cases in the United States. The CDC has issued stricter guidelines for protective gear use and has clarified directions for how health facilities should deal with any cases that arrive on their doorstep.
Some of the guidelines, Mark, are common sense, but really common sense always builds on preparedness. Having a clear chain of command and a well-rehearsed plan and system in place is critical. Make sure that all individuals in the system are trained. These are all important elements.
This is actually great advice, not just for Ebola, but for any highly contagious pathogens. There's a video on the CDC website that very clearly outlines these new guidelines. It would be a good idea for any provider or healthcare organization to watch this video and make sure they're complying.
Well, let's turn now to our guest today. It's an individual who thinks that big data analytics and better use of health technology can be an incredible tool for monitoring population health, both individually, also potentially in the wake of any health crisis.
Dr. Marty Cohn is chief medical scientist at Jointly Health, which is seeking to create a better platform for sharing personalized health data to assist clinicians in improving population health. He also oversaw the IBM team that built the supercomputer Watson.
Lori Robertson looks into false claims spoken about health policy in the public domain. But no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by going to chcradio.com.
And as always, if you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook, on Twitter, because we love hearing from you.
We'll get to our interview with Dr. Marty Cohn in just a moment.
But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. The second open enrollment under the Affordable Care Act gets underway in a couple of weeks, November 15th, the start date. And there's a flurry of activity across the country as preparations look quite different depending upon where you are. In Maryland, they are launching a new system this year, having partnered with the successful Access Health CT, Connecticut's exchange that ran so efficiently. So far, it's testing out well. State of Oregon has cut its final ties between Cover Oregon and Oracle, the company hired to build Oregon's state health insurance exchange. The state distanced itself from Oracle, instead piggybacking onto the federal exchange. Colorado was one of the states that created its own health exchange, and it fared pretty well in the first go-round, roughly 300,000 signed up for coverage during the first open enrollment. Still, a large number of folks in that state staying out of the insurance market altogether. So the Colorado Health Foundation hired Rand Corporation to figure out why. They found consumers were confused about Medicaid and subsidies available through the exchange for private insurance. The CDC has amped up its guidelines for handling Ebola in the clinical setting, releasing a video outlining those new guidelines, calling for extra layers of protection, a buddy system to ensure protective gear is donned and disposed of correctly, and better team coordination for handling active cases. Meanwhile, in Liberia and other parts of West Africa, cases continue to mount, and there's another downside to the deadly outbreak there. Children aren't getting their necessary vaccines now. Liberia had an active program in place that had gotten that country to about 95% vaccination for all kids since the Ebola epidemic began. Those numbers have dropped to 27%. Public health officials are bracing for what they believe will be the next epidemic, preventable childhood diseases like measles and scarlet fever, which stand poised to kill many more children in the future. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Dr. Marty Cohn, Chief Medical Scientist for Jointly Health, a collaboration of world-renowned clinicians, scientists, and mathematicians dedicated to building a next-generation remote monitoring platform for healthcare. Recently, Dr. Cohn was Chief Medical Scientist for Care Delivery Systems at IBM Research, leading IBM's quest to transfer healthcare, including overseeing the development of Watson for Healthcare. Dr. Cohn is co-author of numerous publications on healthcare transformation, including IBM's white paper, Patient-Centered Medical Home, What, Why, and How. He's a board-certified emergency physician, is a fellow at the American College of Emergency Physicians, as well as the American College of Physician Executives. He earned his bachelor's in engineering at MIT and his medical degree from Harvard. Dr. Cohn, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you.
We're really excited about your work and its focus really at this intersection of improving medicine and developing data and technology platforms that can help practitioners facilitate personalized medicine. Now, your focus has been on developing artificial intelligence tools that vastly improve provider experiences, including the development of Watson, the first language recognition supercomputer that earned so much popular attention by beating Jeopardy's all-time best contestants. Could you describe your vision of how data analytics is improving healthcare experience and how it's poised to transform healthcare in the future?
We have recognized over the years certain limitations or problems in the way healthcare is managed and delivered in the United States and around the world. And one of the key components to supporting the transformation of healthcare to something more patient-centered, more efficient, and safer is the ability to make better decisions, and in particular, decisions that are personalized, aimed at the individual. You know, everybody's a little different. Not all diabetics are the same. And so the more we can use all the information available to us to make it easier to make better decisions that are more directed for that individual, the more likely we are to make decisions that are helpful and effective for that patient and then improve healthcare overall.
Well, Dr. Cohn, one of those efforts to transform care, particularly in the primary care space, has been the patient-centered medical home concept. And your views on that were spelled out in a white paper that you co-produced a few years ago titled The Patient-Centered Medical Home, What, Why, and How. And you've said that data mining and remote monitoring are a big part of that agenda. What are some of the key principles for a PCMH model that include better adoption and use of technology?
Yes, we are making progress. We're recognizing, for example, that if we can monitor patients with chronic disease at their home, enlist their active participation in managing their health situation, that things improve. It fits in with the patient-centered medical home is in that one of the principles is what's sometimes called the empowered, knowledgeable patient, a patient who understands enough about his or her health situation and the options that they themselves become better managers of their health care. And so this patient-focused idea of the patient being a better manager is a part of that. And the theme is that any information we can collect from whatever source that can be shared with the patient in a way that the patient can understand and use improves that working relationship with their primary care provider and improves the overall outcome and costs go down.
Dr. Cohn, we operate a primary care practice focused in on serving special populations and have been excited about the opportunity to participate in the patient-centered medical home initiative. I think one of the big challenges that everyone has is how do you contain cost as primary care practitioners? And what are your thoughts on that?
If we look at some expressions of the future of healthcare, define something as the triple aim, improving patient population health, improving the patient experience, and controlling costs. Mm-hmm. So we want all of that now. And in order to do that, we need certain incentives in order to encourage people to participate in that model. One of the concomitants of more personalized means that you'd be less likely to initiate an intervention, a costly intervention, that would not be helpful for this particular patient. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're going to get to that point where, in effect, participants in the healthcare system will be rewarded for quality, for improved outcomes, rather than how much they can do, then we need to change the way healthcare is paid, where the participants in healthcare, the clinicians, for example, are rewarded for improved quality and controlled costs simultaneously. So if we move to a structure where the participants in healthcare are rewarded for achieving both, then we have the foundation where these other support tools, like a clinical decision support and big data analytics, to make it easier for the clinicians and the patient, then we're going to be able to move forward. If we stay with the fee-for-service model, then these tools aren't going to be very, very helpful.
That's right.
So there is, you know, something called the Accountable Care Organization, where these healthcare systems have agreed to provide care to a large group of patients for a specific amount of money that's negotiated. And their obligation in receiving that payment is to improve the health of that population and control costs. So in that environment, then these tools and the idea of the patient-centered medical home make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Dr. Cohn, as I look back over the past several years, one of the areas where we've seen a persistent and accelerating trend is certainly the movement of the country's healthcare providers away from the old paper records that we were raised on and towards a 21st century model of electronic health records. But still, we seem to lack a unified platform that brings all the data together and makes it actionable at the point of care. What needs to happen on the system development side to advance this use of personalized health data?
There are many, many electronic health records out there. Collecting data from different electronic health records is a bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. So the goal is platform agnostic. Develop tools that can work with any of the electronic health records or other data storage systems that are out there. There are efforts to get a common standard. But as one person said, the problem isn't finding a standard. The problem is too many standards, which makes it hard to integrate all that information. So there are organizations such as Jointly Health, which are designing their systems to be platform agnostic and to work with different healthcare information systems. But I don't think that in the near future we are going to achieve that goal of having a single uniform standard. So I think the effort is going to be creating analytic systems that can work across the different platforms.
We're speaking today with Dr. Marty Cohn, Chief Medical Scientist for Jointly Health, collaboration of world-renowned clinicians, scientists, and mathematicians dedicated to building a next-generation remote monitoring platform for healthcare. Until recently, Dr. Cohn was Chief Medical Scientist for Care Delivery Systems at IBM Research, including overseeing the development of Watson for Healthcare. Well, Dr. Cohn, you are probably rightfully proud of the work that you and a whole team of people did in creating Watson. And I think it was generally introduced to the public at Jeopardy. Watson was sent back to medical school to learn about book knowledge. I guess I always wonder about the critical thinking element. Does that exist in Watson, or is Watson just a large repository? Tell us more about it.
Watson is a tool that, using natural language, the typical language of communication, and Watson analyzes written text-like information, be it journal articles or national guidelines. And rather than a passive suppository where you just kind of look up information and search for information, it actually reads and understands huge volumes of literature, like tens of millions of pages in a few seconds, collects information from written documents, and offers suggestions for the physicians to consider or the clinicians to consider based on all its reading. And it uses a concept called cognitive computing, where after a fashion, the computer actually thinks and analyzes and tries to decide how relevant a particular fact or statement is. And it used that same approach in playing Jeopardy. In healthcare, it's a little different in that it doesn't come back with a single response the way it was required to in Jeopardy, but comes back with suggestions prioritized in the order in which Watson thinks it's relevant to the decision to be made. So it doesn't make decisions for the clinicians. It gives them access to huge volumes of literature that we would all like to read, but you know, there are hundreds of thousands of new articles published every year. You can't keep up with it. And so Watson, in effect, is your library assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use that information as you would for it with any other information to make a decision. But again, Watson focuses on that one component of information. And as I mentioned before, our goal is to use all the information. So, for example, where we're working now with Jointly Health is we integrate home monitoring data with other healthcare information data for patients with complex multiple chronic diseases to identify patterns in the information we see that will allow us to identify a patient who is on the verge of getting sick, but not yet actually sick, and get enough information to identify such patients and come up with a simple intervention that will reduce the likelihood they actually will get worse. Mm-hmm. It's estimated that, you know, something on the order of a third of hospital admissions for patients with chronic disease are actually avoidable. So Watson works in one area, other analytic tools work in other areas. My ultimate goal, my dream, is that we will have a platform that can use all the different kinds of information, the text information that right now Watson handles, image information, laboratory information, home monitoring data, the more likely we will be able to make those personalized decisions that allow us to get into the preventive mode of healthcare rather than reactive mode.
Mm-hmm. As I look back on your work over the course of your career, it's very grounded in those years as an emergency room physician, where, of course, you saw all the consequences of poorly managed chronic illness. Then you were at IBM, and now you're at this startup. Maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about who you've partnered with at Jointly Health, how this will be applicable across a broad spectrum of the industry, and I'd be particularly interested, are you working with any practices now in kind of a real-life simulation to see how does this become actionable at the level of the people who are caring for the patients, at the level of the team?
Right now, roughly three-quarters of what's spent on healthcare in the United States is for these patients with multiple chronic diseases. You know, at some point, we'd like to be able to prevent people from developing these chronic diseases, and you know, that idea is called primary prevention. We work with organizations that are in this accountable care-like mode where they have agreed to take on the health management for a large group of patients with multiple chronic diseases, because if that dual objective weren't there, then there would not be necessarily a great deal of interest in what we have to offer, because what we're offering is, you know, reduced utilization of healthcare services and improved health. So we're working with three or four organizations about to actually start monitoring large numbers of patients to demonstrate the value of this preventive mode. The idea of home monitoring of patients with chronic disease has been around for some time, but there's a lot to learn about the space, so we're collaborating with some research organizations as well as organizations that are currently providing health care for large numbers of patients.
Dr. Cohen, you're participating in one of the more interesting conferences of the year, run by Singularity University. This year's theme is Exponential Medicine, Reinventing the Future of Healthcare and Medicine. In addition to the many notable keynote speakers, including yourself, winners of the Nokia Innovation Challenge and Medi Award will be announced. So could you share with our listeners a little more and describe exponential medicine and what we can expect from this year's gathering?
Well, the exponential medicine is really an extraordinary gathering of people working at the very edges of the future of healthcare, and it's across all different areas of technology. So things that have been described in the past are mechanical support systems that allow paralyzed people to walk, creating artificial organs, real organs, creating sheets of tissue that act like normal liver. So it's a gathering of these people just to share ideas and what's been accomplished so far and what the future might be. And within this meeting, you know, there are people that sponsor challenge prizes, some of them with quite substantial rewards if you can come up with systems that accomplish certain tasks. If you offer this prize and the prestige of having won the prize, that many different small or, you know, larger organizations will attempt to take on these challenges, and that out of it may be things that are very useful, very important for supporting and encouraging the transformation of healthcare. So you get to meet and speak with these people and share ideas, and it's rather extraordinary. It gives you faith that there is enough ingenuity and creativity and initiative to actually accomplish these things. And so always kind of leave these meetings quite enthused mm-hmm. and optimistic.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Marty Cohn, Chief Medical Scientist for Jointly Health, a collaboration of world-renowned clinicians, scientists, and mathematicians dedicated to building a next-generation remote monitoring platform for healthcare. You can learn more about his work by going to jointlyhealth.com and find him on Twitter at MSCohn, that's K-O-H-N. Dr. Cohn, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
How well did the Kentucky insurance marketplace do in terms of covering the previously uninsured? At a recent Senate debate, Republican Senator Mitch McConnell and Democrat Allison Lundergan Grimes disagreed on that question. McConnell disputed that the state website called Connect had insured 521,000 people. Grimes, meanwhile, said those 500,000 people had insurance for the first time. More than 500,000 have signed up for coverage through the Connect website for both private insurance and Medicaid, but Grimes is wrong to say they were all previously uninsured. Through the end of the open enrollment period, 75% of Kentuckians who had signed up for coverage indicated they had been uninsured prior to gaining insurance through Connect. That's according to the State Cabinet for Health and Family Services. Between October 1, 2013 and April 15, 2014, the end of open enrollment, 413,410 had enrolled in health coverage, most of them on Medicaid and 82,795 on private insurance. At the debate, McConnell questioned how many of those gaining private insurance did so after their non-compliant policies were canceled. We don't know the answer to that. One Gallup poll, though, shows Kentucky has experienced the second largest drop in the percentage of uninsured of all states. The August poll shows the state's percentage of uninsured dropping from 20.4% to 11.9%. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. In the emergency room, or the ICU, clinicians are confronted with a myriad of unpredictable medical crises that sometimes can be challenging to diagnose. Most of these clinicians are now communicating with colleagues via their smartphones, often sending images of a patient's unique symptoms to one another for shared diagnosis. ICU physician Dr. Josh Landy was noticing a growing trend of image sharing via smartphones to crowdsource second opinions from friends and colleagues across the country. But he also was concerned about the potential violation of HIPAA regulations. So he developed an app for that. He created Figure One, a sort of Instagram for doctors in which images can be de-identified but shared across a dedicated social media platform that would allow input from clinicians within their network. Doctors are using the app to communicate not only with colleagues within their hospital settings, but around the world where someone might have superior expertise with a certain condition. The app was recently used to share a chest image of one of the patients who presented with the Mideastern virus MERS. Dr. Landy says the apps get about 500,000 image views a day, with about 80 million total views so far. He sees the potential for this platform only growing as more young digital natives enter the medical workforce. Figure One is a free download through Apple App Stores and Google Play, a free downloadable app offering secure HIPAA-compliant image sharing among clinicians around the world to reduce the time it takes to zero in on a diagnosis by tapping the collective expert instantly. Now that is a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org and brought to you by the Community Health Center.